This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to the In Focus podcast. This is G. Sampath, your host for today's episode. Earlier this week, on Thursday, Japan's new Prime Minister Fumio Kishida dissolved the lower house of parliament, paving the way for general elections, which are scheduled for October 31st. Japanese politics has for long been dominated by the conservative Liberal Democratic Party, or the LDP as it's known, for much of its post-war history. Under Shinzo Abe, Japan's longest-serving prime minister, who stepped down in September 2020, the LDP has moved further to the right. Abe's successor, Yoshihide Suga, lasted just a year. His growing unpopularity meant that the party did not want to go to elections under his leadership, and he stepped down last month, making way for former Foreign Minister Fumio Kishida to take over. Under Kishida, the LDP has built a sizable lead in approval ratings, with nearly 47% of those polled in different opinion polls saying that they will vote for his party. But Kishida has some tough challenges facing him. Even as COVID-19 is still around, the economy has been battered by the pandemic and the rich-poor divide has only grown sharper in Japan under the growth-centric policies of Shinzo Abe. So is it going to be an easy win for Kishida given the leadership position that the party enjoys in the opinion polls right now? And even if the LDP wins, is he likely to enjoy a long tenure as PM, or is Japan headed for a replay of the unstable 1990s, which saw almost a different prime minister every other year? So how will the new regime navigate also the growing hostility between the US and China, given that China is one of largest trading partners and an immediate and powerful neighbor as well? So with the world's third largest economy heading for elections later this month, we explore all these questions with Stanley joining International Affairs Editor at The Hindu. Stanley, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Sampath. Thanks for having me here.
Stanley, to start off with a very basic question. How does it happen that you become the Prime Minister of your country and within 2 weeks, you know, the parliament is dissolved and you have to go and campaign in order to become the Prime Minister all over again? I mean, can you explain how the Japanese system works and why the new PM has to pass the electoral test, as it were, less than a month into his tenure?
Sampath, it sounds very Japanese. You see, the main reason is that under Yoshihide Suga, the Liberal Democratic Party, its popularity was plunging. And on the other side, the lower house of parliament, the House of Representatives, it is elected for 4 years. So the 4-year term is ending now on October 21st. So according to the Constitution, Article 7 of the Constitution, you need to hold the elections within 30 days. So anyway, you know, Japan has to hold elections by the end of November. So that is one thing. So one option the Liberal Democrats had was to go to elections under the leadership of Suga. But you see, Suga started off his prime ministership with 50% approval. And even at the beginning of this year, he had this 50-plus approval rating, which is actually crashed down to almost 20-plus% during the Olympics time. So Suga managed to hold the Olympics with practically no spectators watching it in the stadiums. COVID crisis was there. The economy, even if you look at other industrialized economies such as the United States and the Chinese economy, the return to growth after battered by COVID, but Japan's economy remained sluggish. So all these problems were mounting one after another, and Suga's leadership was called into question. So then the LDP elite, they were not confident of going to the polls under Suga's leadership. So what you have to do, you don't have much time. You have only a few months, or rather a few weeks. So what you have to do is that you need to elect a new leader and go to the polls under a new, you know, under his leadership with a new face. So that's why Suga, I think, then Suga came under pressure and then he resigned. So LDP initially, they held an intra-party election and then they chose Kishida as their leader. And constitutionally, you need to go to the polls before November, before the end of November. So what Kishida did, that he was trying to capitalize on the momentum, you know, the momentum of the change of guard. He is the new face, the new leader. So the voters are looking up to him to know what he is going to do. And also, he became prime minister and then you have only a 3-week window before the elections, which means the ruling party, which has more resources than the opposition, can, or Kishida's strategy, I think, is that the ruling party can go to the voters, can amplify its messages, reach out to them better than the opposition could do. So that's why he quickly called for the elections, because the elections could be held in November as well. But he wanted to capitalize on this momentum and then win a fresh mandate from the Japanese public. So this is the constitutional and political calculus behind the elections, or behind the political changes that are happening in Japan right now.
Right. Now, coming to the elections themselves, what are likely to be the main issues on which the elections would be fought? Like, what is top of mind for the voters, and what are the opposition parties demanding, and what are the main issues that are likely to be top of the agenda?
See, I think broadly, we can categorize the issues into three. One is, of course, COVID. And second is economy. Third is foreign policy or China. So these three issues, I think, in a larger point of view, are going to dominate the electoral agenda. But if you go deeper, you know, of course, there are differences between LDP and the other party and the Constitutional Democratic Party, especially on issues of rights, you know, even, you know, the right to use different surnames for a couple, etc., etc. But broadly, let's look at these three issues. So economy is a main issue because, as I said, Japan's economic growth remains sluggish on the one side. On the other side, it is also faced with growing inequality like any other industrialized economies. And these issues became worse during the COVID period, because during the COVID period, even the growth has crashed down. And then, you know, there was no wage increase. If you look at real wages, there were studies that there was no increase over the last 4 or 5 years. This is a major issue even within the LDP tent as well. Because if you look at the elections within the LDP for the leadership race, Kishida's approaches, you know, surprisingly sounded more like a center-left politician's policies, because he was talking about a new capitalism. He was talking about redistributing wealth. So this is because the economic issue is so grave, which even the LDP is now realizing that this is a major problem. And COVID, the actual numbers, I think, have come down to less than 2,000. But still, it remains a major problem because Japan is very slowly opening up the economy. Vaccination is some 60 to 70% of the population have got the first dose of the vaccines. So slowly, Japan has to come back to its pre-COVID life, or at least with, you know, COVID remaining under the control, the Japan has to adjust with the new normal. And the Japanese think that Suga's period, you know, the Suga government's handling of the COVID crisis was catastrophic. So the new leadership has to build that confidence, has to offer something to the public about how to win the trust of the public in dealing with the pandemic. The third is, of course, you know, the foreign policy issue is the major problem is China, because Japan, I think, is gradually taking a more hawkish stand, irrespective of who the leader is, towards China. And this position is also shaped by external factors such as, you know, China's crackdown on Hong Kong, or the rise of tensions with Taiwan, or even the United States' growing focus on East Asia and the Indo-Pacific region, where the United States recently reached an agreement with Australia, the US and Britain, formed the AUKUS. So the geopolitical weight is gradually and steadily shifting towards East Asia, and Japan cannot stay away from that, because Japan is anyway, Japan, you know, Taiwan and China, Japan have to deal with these two, or any conflict that would arise out of or around the Taiwan issue, Japan cannot stay out of it. So these three issues, I think, would largely dominate the electoral agenda this time, Sambat.
Okay, speaking of policy issues and what are going to figure top of mind for the voter, what are the main divergences in approach to these three issues between Kishida and the LDP and the opposition Constitutional Democratic Party? Are they differing? Are they offering different things to the voters on these three issues or on any other issue in order to, which would be necessary if they're going to be giving a real choice? Or are they on the same page with just very cosmetic differences?
See, if you look at LDP and the opposition, traditionally, LDP, as you rightly pointed out in your introduction, that LDP is a big tent of conservative and right-wing politicians of Japan. And LDP has dominated Japanese politics throughout its post-war period. You know, it was defeated only twice in the history since mid-1950s. And the most recent was in 2009, when the Democratic Party was still there. The Democratic Party defeated LDP. Now, the Constitutional Democratic Party, which rose from the ruins of the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party was in power for only for 3 years, and then it collapsed. It was when the Democratic Party was in power that the tsunami happened or the Fukushima disaster happened. That kind of destroyed the party's prospects, those crises. And then the party leadership fell out with each other, and it splintered into many groups. And then with the Constitutional Democratic Party, the former Democratic Party leaders are coming together and putting together a proper center-left platform to take on the LDP. The LDP on the other side remained a big hegemon. It is a big tent in which you have conservative politicians, you have hard right politicians, and you also have, sometimes at least in terms of economic policies, you have center-left politicians. But LDP's politics has largely been dominated by the conservative right-wing wings of the party. So this is how it is traditionally these two parties are differentiated. Now, when it comes to the current issue, Shinzo Abe had adopted a very neoclassical economic policy, which had its pluses and minuses as well. On the one side, Japan returned to growth, but at the same time, inequality widened. And Shinzo Abe also wanted to take a more, hawkish, let's say, if we can use that word, or more aggressive approach towards China or on Japan's defense policies, which is in contrast with the pacifist post-war constitution Japan has. So I think if you look at it from that point of view, Kishida is more likely to take these positions, not on the economic policy, but on foreign policy is likely to take it further. Because Kishida has already said it several times that he wants to bolster the defense capabilities of Japan. And on economic policy, the Liberal Democratic Party realizes that there are challenges, as we have already discussed. There are challenges that need to be fixed. So on economic policy, Kishida is now talking about a new capitalism. He is talking about income distribution. He is talking about raising taxes on the rich. He is talking about government intervention in raising salaries to make sure that there is increase in real wage. So these are the agendas apparently taken up by the Constitutional Democratic Party, the CDJP. So when it comes to the economic policy, you see the policies pursued by CDJP, Kishida, Liberal Democratic Party. There are getting blurred. But on the other side, if you go a little deeper into the policies, we can see that CDJP is taking a more progressive positions on individual rights. And the CDJP is also trying to build a coalition against the Liberal Democratic Party. Recently, I think a couple of days ago, the Communist Party of Japan, the Social Democratic Party of Japan, and another small party, they came together with the CDJP to reach some kind of an electoral understanding. And the CDJP's leader, Yukio Edano, says that we would want to win this election at any cost. So they are trying to bring together all the small opposition parties. And then they say that CDJP, says that they are backing same-sex marriages. They want to ensure that, equality for everybody, including gay people before the law. And they also support, which is a major social issue in Japan, they also support couple using different surnames. So on these issues, basically based on individual freedom and rights, these issues CDJP is taking up. While on the other side, the LDP, while on the economic side, the LDP is talking about income distribution, on social policies, it remains conservative. Because Kishida has already said that he won't support same-sex marriages because he thinks that it questions the fundamental structure of Japan's family system and social values. So that is coming out of his conservative or LDP's conservative belief system. So he is sticking on to it. So you can see these differences. You can also see some similarities on bigger approaches. When it comes to foreign policy, one thing is that there is a large consensus in Japan on issues like your alliance with the United States, or you know, challenges coming from China, or Japan's position in East Asia, etc., etc. There is a large consensus, and we should also keep in mind that this consensus was built by the LDP's hegemonic influence over Japan's polity. So as I said earlier, there were only two occasions when the LDP were out of power. So in 2009, when they lost power, the Democratic Party was in power. Basically, there was, you know, the relationship with the United States had taken a hit. It was a major issue. But still, even when the Democratic Party was in power, there was, you know, when it comes to issues like American forces in Japan, the Democratic Party couldn't do anything about it. Okinawa, which is in the southern part of the Japanese islands, some 5,000 American troops are there in Okinawa. So these issues, I think no party can, at least for now, can, take a decision against the consensus. But at the same time, there you can see some differences. For example, the LDP under now Kishida or under Shinzo Abe, LDP is taking, you know, it's a gradual process. Gradually they are becoming more aggressive when it comes to their foreign policy. And this aggressiveness is, as we saw, all is also shaped by external factors, because tensions are rising on Japan's shores. So that is one thing. Whereas the Democratic Party, the Constitutional Democratic Party, or the Constitutional Democratic Party has come together with the Communists and the Social Democrats, who are clearly on the left. They are, inclined more towards Japan's post-war pacifism. So these differences you can actually see. But in the election, you know, as we discussed earlier, if you look at the opinion polls, the Liberal Democratic Party with Kishida at its helm now commands, close to 50%. Support among the electorates, whereas the opposition party, which is trying to cobble together an alliance, which is trying to take on the LDP on social issues, on foreign policy issues, etc., on COVID, because the opposition has blasted LDP's handling of COVID during the most recent wave. So they are trying to take up these issues, but at the same time, the opposition is splintered, and the opposition's rating, according to most opinion polls, do not even touch double digits. So the point is that despite the differences between these two, despite multiple issues, different issues they are taking up, don't expect a miracle in the election.
Right. So, Stanley, we are running out of time. So, one final question where I would like you to comment. On the question of foreign policy, you just spoke about how there is a general consensus across parties on with regard to the relationship with the United States, with its bases there and so on. But there has been some changes in global geopolitics where the focus, as you rightly pointed out, is shifting towards East Asia, and there is hostility between the US and China. And Japan on its for itself has also had some friction with regard to some islands in the East China Sea, which have conflicting claims from Japan and China as well. So given this sort of trend towards hawkishness in foreign policy, how do you think it's going to play out in terms of balancing between the US and China? And the fact that China is a very powerful neighbor as well.
Yeah, Sampath, I think one geopolitical development that happened almost at the same time when Kishida became the Prime Minister of Japan was the AUKUS agreement between the United States, the United Kingdom, and Australia. I think the AUKUS agreement is, one of the most important geopolitical developments of this century. Because when Kishida was the foreign minister of Abe, He emphasized on diplomacy, you know, building relationships. And Japan, for a long time also, while it remained, you know, closely linked with the United States as an ally, it also tried to walk a tightrope between the United States and China, because Japan and even Australia, they knew that their prosperity would depend on their economic cooperation with China. So this was the unwritten understanding in Tokyo or in Canberra, or most of these capitals in Southeast Asia or in the Pacific region. But you see, AUKUS has defied that trend. So Australia, despite its economic interdependence with China, has decided to embrace the United States in a strategic agreement that will have far-reaching geopolitical impact, because Australia is now acquiring nuclear submarines from the United States and the UK, and the United States would also get greater access to Australia's ports, the United States Navy. So this is a long-term process. It will take 8 to 10 years, but in 8 to 10 years, the United States and Britain would try to balance against China's growing influence in the Indo-Pacific region. And Australia, despite being economically interdependent with China, you know, on Chinese trade, etc., has taken this decision. I think this would be a game changer when it comes to other countries as well, because Japan is closer to China than Australia is. Japan is more intertwined with the conflicts in the region, because it is, as you said, there is a dispute in East China Sea over a group of islands. And then Japan sees that any Chinese attempt to take over Taiwan, or Chinese aggressive move on Taiwan, will have a bearing on Japan as well. But you can also see that Japan is becoming increasingly forthright in its opposition towards China, despite its trade interdependence with China. Because when Yoshihide Suga went to Washington, D.C. and met Joe Biden, they issued a joint communique in which they raised shared concerns about stability in Japan, in Taiwan. This was the first time Taiwan is appearing a U.S.-Japanese joint statement in, say, four decades. So these issues are now coming back to the fore of Japan's foreign policy agenda. And you look at Kishida's foreign policy speeches. Kishida says that he supports building missile capabilities to boost Japan's defense capabilities, because if Japan is coming under attack, Japan will have to be in a position to deter those attacks. So he is building it from a deterrence point of view, but still he is basically anchoring his foreign policy on a stronger defense policy. So these are gradual steps. We can see that Japan is taking a more hawkish position on China, especially when tensions are going up in the region. So I think this will continue, it has to be seen that whether Kishida, even if he wins the election, will be able to stabilize, Japanese politics, will be able to offer a stable governance, etc., because this Liberal Democratic Party, it's not easy to take the Liberal Democratic Party together under one man's leadership. Abe succeeded in it, but we will have to wait and see. But I think irrespective of the leadership, there are certain trends we can see in Japan's foreign policy, and all those trends suggest that Japan would take a more hawkish position in the years to come.
Right. It does seem to be a very exciting time for scholars of geopolitics here, because it's interesting that Kishida has been a foreign minister and has met most of the top leaders, and he knows them and they know him as well, and there would be a comfort level with him. And if he comes back as the prime minister, we could expect that at least the Anglophone world would be more comfortable with someone of his stature and his track record coming in. Stanley, thank you so much for sharing your insights and comments on the Japanese elections are coming up. Look forward to doing this again. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Sampath. Thank you very much.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.